He was not. The hangar was bare. Oh my God, where's the plane? As the two vehicles rocketed into the empty hangar, Becker desperately searched for an escape. There was none. The building's rear wall, an expansive sheet of corrugated metal, had no doors or windows. The taxi roared up beside him, and Becker looked left to see Houlihan raising his gun. Reflex took over. Becker slammed down on his brakes. He barely slowed. The hangar floor was slick with oil. The Vespa went into a headlong skid. Beside him there was a deafening squeal as the taxi's brakes locked and the balding tires hydroplaned on the slippery surface. The car spun around in a cloud of smoke and burning rubber, only inches to the left of Becker's skidding Vespa. Now side by side, the two vehicles skimmed out of control on a collision course with the rear of the hangar. Becker desperately pumped his brakes, but there was no traction. It was like driving on ice. In front of him, the metal wall loomed. It was coming fast. As the taxi spiraled wildly beside him, Becker faced the wall and braced for the impact. There was an ear-splitting crash of steel and corrugated metal, but there was no pain. Becker found himself suddenly in the open air, still on his Vespa, bouncing across a grassy field. It was as if the hangar's back wall had vanished before him. The taxi was still beside him, careening across the field. An enormous sheet of corrugated metal from the hangar's back wall billowed off the taxi's hood and sailed over Becker's head. Heart racing, Becker gunned the Vespa and took off into the night. Chapter 84. Jabba let out a contented sigh as he finished the last of his solder points. He switched off the iron, put down his penlight, and lay a moment in the darkness of the mainframe computer. He was beat, his neck hurt. Internal work was always cramped, especially for a man of his size. "And they just keep building them smaller," he mused. As he closed his eyes for a well-deserved moment of relaxation, someone outside began pulling on his boots. "Jabba, get out here!" a woman's voice yelled. "Midge found me," he groaned. "Jabba, get out here!" Reluctantly, he slithered out. "For the love of God, Midge, I told you." But it was not Midge. Jabba looked up, surprised. Soshi Kuta was a 90-pound live wire. She was Jabba's right-hand assistant, a razor-sharp SysSec techie from MIT. She often worked late with Jabba, and was the one member of his staff who seemed unintimidated by him. She glared at him and demanded, "Why the hell didn't you answer your phone? Or my page?" "Your page?" Jabba repeated. I thought it was..." "Never mind. There's something strange going on in the main databank." Jabba checked his watch. "Strange?" Now he was growing concerned. "Can you be any more specific?" 2 minutes later, Jabba was dashing down the hall toward the databank. Chapter 85. Greg Hale lay curled on the Node 3 floor. Strathmore and Susan had just dragged him across crypto and bound his hands and feet with 12-gauge printer cable from the Node 3 laser printers. Susan couldn't get over the artful maneuver the commander had just executed. He faked the call. Somehow Strathmore had captured Hale, saved Susan, and bought himself the time needed to rewrite Digital Fortress. Susan eyed the bound cryptographer uneasily. Hale was breathing heavily. Strathmore sat on the couch with the Beretta propped awkwardly in his lap. Susan returned her attention to Hale's terminal and continued her random string search. Her fourth string search ran its course and came up empty. "Still no luck," she sighed. "We may need to wait for David to find Tenkato's copy." Strathmore gave her a disapproving look. "If David fails and Tenkato's key falls into the wrong hands..." Strathmore didn't need to finish. Susan understood. Until the Digital Fortress file on the Internet had been replaced with Strathmore's modified version, Tenkato's passkey was dangerous. "After we make the switch," Strathmore added, "I don't care how many passkeys are floating around. The more the merrier." He motioned for her to continue searching. "But until then, We're playing beat the clock. Susan opened her mouth to acknowledge, but her words were drowned out by a sudden deafening blare. The silence of crypto was shattered by a warning horn from the sublevels. Susan and Strathmore exchanged startled looks. "What's that?" Susan yelled, timing her question between the intermittent bursts. "Translator," Strathmore called back, looking troubled. "It's too hot. Maybe Hale was right about the Ark's power not pulling enough freon." "What about the auto-abort?" Strathmore thought a moment, then yelled, "Something must have shorted." A yellow siren light spun above the crypto floor and swept a pulsating glare across his face. "You better abort," Susan called. Strathmore nodded. There was no telling what would happen if 3 million silicon processors overheated and decided to ignite. Strathmore needed to get upstairs to his terminal and abort the digital fortress run, particularly before anyone outside of crypto noticed the trouble and decided to send in the cavalry. Strathmore shot a glance at the still unconscious Hale. He laid the Beretta on a table near Susan and yelled over the sirens, "Be right back!" As he disappeared through the hole in the Node 3 wall, Strathmore called over his shoulder, "And find me that passkey!" Susan eyed the results of her unproductive passkey search and hoped Strathmore would hurry up and abort. The noise and lights in crypto felt like a missile launch. On the floor, Hale began to stir. With each blast of the horn, he winced. Susan surprised herself by grabbing the Beretta. Hale opened his eyes to Susan Fletcher standing over him with the gun leveled at his crotch. "Where's the passkey?" Susan demanded. Hale was having trouble getting his bearings. What happened?" "You blew it, that's what happened. Now where's the passkey?" Hale tried to move his arms, but realized he was tied. His face became taut with panic. "Let me go!" "I need the passkey," Susan repeated. "I don't have it. Let me go!" Hale tried to get up. He could barely roll over. Susan yelled between blasts of the horn. "You're North Dakota. An Ensai Tenkato gave you a copy of his key. I need it now." "You're crazy," Hale gasped. "I'm not North Dakota." He struggled unsuccessfully to free himself. Susan charged angrily. "Don't lie to me. Why the hell is all of North Dakota's mail in your account?" "I told you before," Hale pleaded as the horns blared on. "I snooped Strathmore. That email in my account was mail I copied out of Strathmore's account. Email comment stole from Tenkato." "Bull. You can never snoop the commander's account." "You don't understand," Hale yelled. "There was already a tap on Strathmore's account." Hale delivered his words in short bursts between the sirens. "Someone else put the tap there. I think it was Director Fontaine. I just piggybacked. You've got to believe me. That's how I found out about his plan to rewrite Digital Fortress. I've been reading Strathmore's brainstorms." "Brainstorms?" Susan paused. Strathmore had undoubtedly outlined his plans for Digital Fortress using his brainstorm software. If anyone had snooped the commander's account, all the information would have been available. "Rewriting Digital Fortress is sick," Hale cried. "You know damn well what it implies. Total NSA access." The sirens blasted, drowning him out, but Hale was possessed. "You think we're ready for that responsibility? You think anyone is? It's fucking short-sighted. You say our government has the people's best interests at heart? Great. But what happens when some future government doesn't have our best interests at heart? This technology is forever." Susan could barely hear him. The noise in crypto was deafening. Hale struggled to get free. He looked Susan in the eye and kept yelling. "How the hell do civilians defend themselves against a police state when the guy at the top has access to all their lines of communication? How do they plan a revolt?" Susan had heard this argument many times. The future government's argument was a stock EFF complaint. "Strathmore had to be stopped," Hale screamed as the sirens blasted. "I swore I'd do it. That's what I've been doing here all day, watching his account, waiting for him to make his move so I could record the switch in progress. I needed proof, evidence that he'd written in the back door. That's why I copied all his email into my account. It was evidence that he'd been watching Digital Fortress. I planned to go to the press with the information. Susan's heart skipped. Had she heard correctly? Suddenly, this did sound like Greg Hale. Was it possible? If Hale had known about Strathmore's plan to release a tainted version of Digital Fortress, he could wait until the whole world was using it, and then drop his bombshell, complete with proof. Susan imagined the headlines. Cryptographer Greg Hale unveils secret U.S. plan to control global information. Was it Skipjack all over? Uncovering an NSA backdoor again would make Greg Hale famous beyond his wildest dreams. It would also sink the NSA. She suddenly found herself wondering if maybe Hale was telling the truth. No, she decided, of course not. Hale continued to plead. I aborted your tracer because I thought you were looking for me. I thought you suspected Strathmore was being snooped. I didn't want you to find the leak and trace it back to me. It was plausible, but unlikely. Then why'd you kill Chartruckian? Susan snapped. I didn't, Hale screamed over the noise. Strathmore was the one who pushed him. I saw the whole thing from downstairs. Chartruckian was about to call the SysX and ruin Strathmore's plans for the back door. Hale's good, Susan thought. He's got an angle for everything. Let me go, Hale begged. I didn't do anything. Didn't do anything, Susan shouted, wondering what was taking Strathmore so long. You and Tancado were holding the NSA hostage, at least until you double-crossed him. Tell me, she pressed, did Tancado really die of a heart attack, or did you have one of your buddies take him out? You're so blind, Hale yelled. Can't you see I'm not involved? Untie me before security gets here. Security's not coming, she snapped flatly. Hale turned white. What? Strathmore faked the phone call. Hale's eyes went wide. He seemed momentarily paralyzed. Then he began writhing fiercely. Strathmore'll kill me. I know he will. I know too much. Easy, Greg. The sirens blared as Hale yelled out, But I'm innocent! You're lying, and I have proof. Susan strode around the ring of terminals. Remember that tracer you aborted? She asked, arriving at her own terminal. I sent it again. Shall we see if it's back yet? Sure enough, on Susan's screen, a blinking icon alerted her that her tracer had returned. She palmed her mouse and opened the message. This data will seal Hale's fate, she thought. Hale is North Dakota. The data box opened. Hale is... Susan stopped. The tracer materialized, and Susan stood in stunned silence. There had to be some mistake. The tracer had fingered someone else, a most unlikely person. Susan steadied herself on the terminal and reread the data box before her. It was the same information Strathmore said he'd received when he ran the tracer. Susan had figured Strathmore had made a mistake, but she knew she'd configured the tracer perfectly. And yet the information on the screen was unthinkable. N Dakota equals ET at doshisha.edu. ET? Susan demanded, her head swimming. Ensei Tancado is North Dakota? It was inconceivable. If the data was correct, Tancado and his partner were the same person. Susan's thoughts were suddenly disconnected. She wished the blaring horn would stop. Why doesn't Strathmore turn that damn thing off? Hale twisted on the floor, straining to see Susan. What does it say? Tell me! Susan blocked out Hale and the chaos around her. Ensei Tancado is North Dakota. She reshuffled the pieces, trying to make them fit. If Tancado was North Dakota, then he was sending email to himself, which meant North Dakota didn't exist. Tancado's partner was a hoax. North Dakota is a ghost, she said to herself. Smoke and mirrors.